session number 30304.
Ted Rayner, Reel 24. I believe in May 1942 you were stood by waiting for the 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne.
Yes, well, we didn't actually know that it was going to be that when we were addressed, shall I say, as a unit. it seemed more likely, I suppose, that we were going to be used for some anti-invasion measures or that kind of thing. But we soon discovered that there was going to be a large-scale bombing raid on a convenient city in Germany towards the end of the month. This, I think, was about the 25th of May. The 25th, yes, because then we were bombed up and prepared for a bombing raid, but we didn't know where it would be. We did know that we would be flying across to Thornaby, and there would be perhaps a dozen aircraft from each of the bases. Thornaby by that time had become, this was our old 220 base, of course, in 1940, but by 1942 it had become number 6 Coastal Operation Training Unit. A dozen aircraft are thereabouts, making up perhaps 24, 25, that was the aim, to be added to this bomber force, to be unleashed on the city to be chosen. We didn't yet know which it would be. And on the 28th, we were across in Thornaby being briefed, but it was a debriefing, as it happened, because the powers that be had decided that the target, instead of being Hamburg, which we could have coped with quite well as far as range is concerned, it was going to be Cologne. So we were stood down. The weather also had something to do with it. The forecast was that it would be better over, the weather would be kinder over Cologne than it would be along the Rhine. So that Hamburg, no, sorry, the other way around. It was better along the Rhine, Cologne, than it would be at Hamburg on the coast. So back we went to Silloth and continued, and in fact, one of the activities filling the gap was the second part of the visit by the Crown Film Unit, which we just described a little earlier. So that the time was quite short, comparatively, in terms of the instructing that we were able to do between the first of the raids, in which 1,046 aircraft successfully bombed, and the second target, which was to be the target of the second 1,000 bomber raid, which was to be Bremen, yes. I'm just thinking, in between, of course, there was another raid which didn't quite make the 1,000 mark. I think it was 900 and something over, I think the target was Essen. But we can truly say that we took part in the second 1,000 bomber raid. it was a bit strange and certainly novel in many ways for us as seafaring, shall we say, airmen, to be flying over so much land. Obviously, we had flown over land for a short period of time, from time to time, when on North Sea patrols, Denmark and Norway, but a completely different kettle of fish, so far as we're concerned, with Bremen. The crewing up was not entirely to our liking, and because although there would be a pilot for each of the chosen aircraft, obviously there were more pilots at an operational training unit than there were, relatively speaking, other crew members, but there weren't, there were only few experienced navigators, air gunners, and wireless operators. I discovered that my navigator, and this was the first time I had flown with a navigator as such, was to be a Texan who had come over from America to join the RAF, or had joined, I don't know whether this is possible, but could have happened, I suppose, in America, because a lot of the training was done over there at that time. He had only a very short experience of flying and indeed navigating over water. I was fortunate in having an experienced wireless operator, also of course an air gunner, but he chose to be the wireless operator in this crew, fortunately, as it happened. A chap called Derbyshire, with whom I'd had several trips when on 220 Squadron, so we knew each other. But the rear gunner was a small young lad. He didn't look to be more than 17 or 18. A very quiet fellow, and he was, I don't know what he thought of this trip at 12,000 feet in a cold turret as his introduction to operational flying. However, these were the crews we were given. We were briefed by the station commander, happy in the knowledge that our aiming point over Bremen would be the U-boat yards, because that was our chief object in life, to destroy as many of them as we could, or at least to keep an eye on them. The facts of the matter were that we were only given 20 minutes as a twin-engined aircraft flying below 16,000 feet to get the bombing run in. Before that, the heavier aircraft would be dropping their bombs, and after the 20-minute break, so that we had to be over the target at a 10 to or 0050 or let's do it in ordinary language. 10 to 1, between 10 to 1 in the morning and 10 past 1. We took off in great gusto, of course, a 25 aircraft taking off from Thornaby, which was a novel sight to anybody who did happen to see it. But in any case, I'm quite sure that the roar of all these engines gave some solace to the people of Teesside who had been subject to German bombing, including the bombing of the ballroom there and other places of some interest. So that we were up and away with navigation lights on so we could see each other on the course that the navigator had been given, thank goodness. Didn't have to work out, but been given because of everybody was on the same sort of line, as it were. The old Hudson struggling away. Not that you notice, I mean, the engines were purring as sweetly as ever, to 12,000 feet. And by that time, of course, we were on our own. We did get occasional glimpses of the other cohorts, but I was only reminded, going across, I remember this quite well, flying across, climbing up to 12,000 feet along this sea, the sea below, which had a nice stripe of moonlight on it, of the poem written by Alfred Noyes. I'm sure we remember it from school, and everybody does if they were given the opportunity to read it. The air was, these weren't the words, of course, these were what I was thinking. I had transposed these words to it because it seemed so relevant, and I still remembered my school days. The air was throbbing with danger for Bremen folk ahead. The moon was shining eastward where marauding craft had led. The way was a ribbon of moonlight along the sea below. And the highwaymen came riding, riding, riding. The highwaymen came riding with hundreds more to go. So eventually we got to our turning point. And we were on intercom, of course. I asked the navigator for the next course to steer, and this was one he himself had to work out. And I got no reply. So I asked again, still no reply. So I thought, well, we've got to have some solution to this, and I've got to know where I'm going. So I put the automatic pilot in, a bit of a dicey thing to do, but the only way I could see what was happening, as I hadn't heard anything, down below in the navigator's crow's nest, as it were, and went down, and I said, well, put your finger on the place then, because it was rather dim. He got his light, spotlight on it, and he hadn't got a clue. But fortunately, as I turned to go back up the steps into the pilot's cabin, I saw a brief flash, flashes rather than just one, which was indicative, of course, of heavy flak. So that was obviously the way to go. So I started on this course of, I think it was 135, something like that, and it then became obvious that Bremen was a target well chosen by the powers that be, because, of course, if you get, Wilhelmshaven on your right and Bremerhaven on your left, then that is the mouth of the River Bremen, and all you've got to do then is to fly up it. I say that's all you've got to do, but I never got to do it, because shortly after that, as we were getting closer to, and these flashes and were increasing, suddenly had word from the rear gunner. Hesitantly, he said, "Pilot, I think there's something behind us." So, in the flash of an eyelid, as it were, Darby was up in the astro bubble and yelled, "Night fighter!" And so I pushed forward on the stick, turned it over to port, pulled back the throttles, and we were in a spiral dive. The sky at that height was clear. We were, of course, an easy thing to see in the night sky with the presumably the night fighter still above us. Actually, as we went into the dive, what's he called? The wireless operator, Darby, said, "Oh my God, it's just as well we went into the dive," or something like that, because he fired just as we turned. So we knew that he must have overshot, and we were going down in this dive. I heard nothing more from the navigator nor from the tail gunner until actually we landed. Neither Derbyshire nor myself were very keen to enter into conversation with them, because we wanted a quiet intercom so that Darby could keep an eye open for this night fighter, which was about. And we knew that they, by this time, the Germans had got a much more effective system of night fighter patrols, in that one would be close to a base or a radio signal, and the other would be on patrol. So it was likely that there would shortly be two, unless we did something quickly. Darby was able to pick out the night fighter. Couldn't distinguish it really as between a Junkers 88 or an ME-110. There were, we discovered later, a lot of ME-110s. That was a twin-engine fighter, the one that shot down the squadron leader, actually, on this raid. He kept calling, so far as he could, the position where he thought he could see this night fighter. So the only thing to do, we were about 8,000 feet by the time I pulled out of the dive, and well below that back before we flattened out. And there was a layer of cloud at about 3,000 feet, so I dived down to that. And we had another call from Darby saying that he seems to be, I forget the position he called, I think it was 5 o'clock high, something like that. And he seemed to be getting round onto our tail, so I went down into the cloud and decided that we'd at least appear occasionally to try and get him to come with us, as we were now on a westerly course. There's no point in trying to get to the initial target, because we couldn't get there between 10 to 1 and 10 past 1. And the secondary target we'd left behind, which was Wilhelmshaven. The third target was any German activity or on any of the Frisian islands. So, as I say, I was on a westerly course, And I came out of cloud. It was about 7/10, something like that, seven parts of each part of the sky covered and three parts not, if you can imagine that. Decided that we could afford to keep out until Darby picked him up again. So that continued until we got into more consistent cloud, and by that time I decided we would stay like that until we had approximately timed it so that we would be approaching the Frisian Islands. And I then came out of cloud down to about 1,500 feet, and we sort of patrolled across one or two of the Frisian Islands, but we saw nothing other than what we thought would be Dutch rather than German. And so we arrived back with our bombs, and I was surprised that they were very understanding about the fact that we hadn't reached the target. But the things that were said by Darby to the rear gunner don't bear repeating. My own language to the navigator was kind to the extent that I realized, as did Darby actually, that it was such a shock to them really to be put in their relative circumstances, and so ended that episode.